This is a Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. I'm also a denizen of Colorado, and that means I'm going to Mile High Con 47 on October 23rd. It lasts to the 25th. And I'm guessing so is my guest. We're going to chat about her and Mile High Con for the next half an hour or so. And after we're done, I suggest you visit her website. It's www.viviancaith.com. We're going to spell that here for you in a second to learn more about her. And then hit the newly revamped milehighcon.org to learn more about the con and buy your tickets. It's a really cool website this year. I don't know who did it, but it's pretty neat. I should ask Rose. An avid tea drinker, my guest tonight, writes and edits in the wee hours of the morning while working a night job. That clicking noise you heard? Probably the sound of her keyboard. Probably. Unless you have spiders in your house, which I do in the basement, which kind of sucks. Large, scary spiders that stare at you while you sleep. Well, that's what I have a cat for, Vivian. She has studied under David Farland, Kevin J. Anderson, and Rebecca, is it Moista?
It's Mesta.
Mesta. But there's an O in there, so she's messing with me.
Yes.
Miss Kaith was introduced to speculative fiction at an early age by growing up in the land of enchantment. She knits and cross-stitches in her spare time. The author of multiple short stories and novellas, her work has appeared in various magazines and anthologies. Her post-apocalyptic proto-Victorian gay adventure series, The Adventures of Vernon Aldswell?
Yes.
Gentleman Explorer is available through Bold Strokes Books. She lives with her husband in Colorado, their dog who thinks he's a werehuman, and a super genius cat. Well, really, who doesn't have a super genius cat?
Every once in a while, I run across someone who doesn't, and I'm always astonished.
They're muggles.
Yes.
They really are. So, Vivian Kaith, and it's C-A-E-T-H-E.
That's correct.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, it's finally stopped raining, finally stopped hailing.
Oh, it hailed?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I live in Aurora.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
it's like there's two things you can count on, hail and a bunch of guys in trucks running around going, I think you have hail damage.
Yep.
So what's up? What are you doing?
Right now, I'm actually trying desperately to get caught up on my Patreon, which I'm not doing right now because I write the first drafts on a typewriter and you would be able to hear it. It's insanely loud.
Well, I love a typewriter. I always have. And one of the things that when I'm typing, I like to have a little bit of resistance in my keyboard. So it's been a challenge for me switching from the old blocky white Mac keyboard to the sleek MacBook Pro laptop keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Because it's all clicky and not pushy.
It's a little trip.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you owe? Do you owe people?
I don't owe people.
No, well, I mean, I do owe stories, people. Like stories.
I don't. Yeah, no one's gonna break my kneecaps.
Okay.
But it's I'm actually writing a novel. It's called The Squire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically Don Quixote in space.
Okay.
And what I do with it is I write a chapter a month, and then people give me money for that and various other goodies. It's kind of like an ongoing Kickstarter thing. It's absolutely amazing.
And how far behind are you?
I'm about a week behind because I have my own personal schedule.
Okay.
And I'm trying to match. No one, like I said, no one's going to come by and break my kneecaps for not finishing this.
Yeah, you're not like chapter. 6 months behind.
Oh, no.
Okay, good.
I like to work ahead so that I don't have this problem, but all the other things.
Well, a lot of people have been using that, and I've heard it pronounced Patreon as well, which is...
I've heard it pronounced both ways, but I think it sounds more dignified the way I pronounce it.
I understand, but you've got to understand that for a kid from Fresno, I'm going to call it Patreon.
I like it.
And it's an interesting model because it does allow people... It's to be patrons, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a patron of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot different than Kickstarter because it's not fund everything. It's, I'm going to give you a little bit. And then fund me, and then I'm going to give you a little bit, and then fund me, and I'm going to give you a little bit, and it's like an ongoing thing.
Yes.
Have you liked it?
I love it. I love it for many reasons, but one of the reasons I really love it is the audience engagement. Because I'm writing a novel, which is usually a really solitary thing.
Right.
But now I get to release chapters, and I get to get feedback on those chapters from people who actually are enjoying reading it.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I know, it's mind-blowing.
So are you then taking the feedback and doing edits, or you just keep plowing forward?
Actually, all the feedback I've gotten so far is where's the next chapter?
Ooh.
So I'm squee.
So what you're saying is that someone who does some editing apparently doesn't need an editor right now.
Not yet, but I am. One of the goals for it is to pay an editor to fix everything to make sure that it's actually really well written.
So it'd be really cool meta-wise if you paid yourself.
Yes, it would. And to be fairly honest, this is going to take, since I'm doing a chapter a month and there's going to be 25 to 30 chapters, it's going to take me several years to finish it.
And how far in are you?
I'm 4 or 5 chapters in.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you just started.
I just started. And so by the time I reach the end, the beginning is going to be like a completely different universe.
Wow.
So I'll be able to go back and edit without having reviewed it.
Yeah. See, that would drive me up a wall. It totally would.
Just because you don't read back or you like to read back or...
Oh, my process, yes. My process is write, and it's like vomit, right? Just mm-hmm. vomit out the words, write until I'm exhausted. And then, or until I'm better at this because I used to not plot or outline, and mm-hmm. I'm getting better about that. And actually, I thank Rachel Aaron for that, because her 2K to 10K book mm-hmm. helped me a lot. That and Scrivener. And yes. So I'm gotten a lot better at that. I don't write myself into corners as much as I used to, but I still get to a point where I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do here. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how to get this to the next part. And so I'll start thinking about that. And as I'm thinking about that, I go back.
Oh.
And then I'll go back through and go, oh, what was I thinking? This is terrible. I have to change this. And then before you know it, I'll go back through and then get to the point where I stopped before and then vomit out the whole next section.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my process.
I usually do something similar to that, but this book is so weird that it's its own creature.
Hmm.
Because I'm basically writing Don Quixote in space, so I already have the plot.
So what's he... there's no up or down. What's he tipping?
Asteroids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has a spaceship called the Rosinante, which is the name of the horse in the actual novel.
Yeah, actually, James S.A. Corey called,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to need the name of their spaceship back.
Oh, dang it. That was so close.
James,
I'll just spell it differently.
James Holden in the Expanse series actually does name his ship the Rosinante.
Well, I'll just spell it the Spanish way.
Well, I thought it was funny because this is a spoiler. It triggers someone who's looking for ships, sees that name and says, really, Holden? Would you name your ship? Would you? Would you be that guy? Would you name your ship the Rosinante? And figures it out. So it's kind of cool.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Well, that's neat. So how do people, like, what's the URL if someone wants to go there, check it out, and maybe back you?
It's patreon.com. So it's patreon.com/VivianCaithe, CAETHE.
Oh, that's simple. So it's not like the name of the book or anything. It's just you.
Nope. It's just me.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
And if you go onto the website, you'll see like my mission and there's videos and I'm giving videos out every month about my process. And it's fun and it's interactive and stuff.
Sure. So before we get any further, I wanted to talk a little bit about Mile High Con. I'm assuming you're going because you're on my list.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it immensely.
Awesome. So how many Mile High Cons have you gone to?
So far, 2.
Okay, so is this your second or this will be your third?
This will be my third.
Okay, so last year you and I met mm-hmm. and Josh Vogt introduced us. So yes. that was your second.
Yes.
And you look like you were having a ton of fun.
I always do. Rose does this amazing thing where her panels are actually interesting. Which sounds horrible, but
no, it doesn't.
But it's fun to be on them as much as it's fun to look at them and like participate as part of the audience. And so it's one of the few cons where I actually go to other panels that I'm not on.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, see, yeah. That's always been a thing for me. It's like I'll look at panel descriptions at WorldCon or something, and I'm like,
Mm-hmm.
And other people are going, oh, I'm going to this one. Oh, I'm going. I'm like,
Yeah.
But I do the same thing you're talking about. It's like, oh, what's going on right now? I'm looking in the program. I'm trying to figure out where I need to be, you know. And what I hate is when there's a choice.
Yes.
You have to choose and choose wisely.
And then you always regret it. Not always.
No, but then your friend goes to the other one and tells you how awesome it was.
Exactly. And you're like, ah, time turner.
So do you have a favorite area? Is there a favorite track that you like? What's your favorite thing about Mile High Con?
I love the science track.
Oh, okay.
I absolutely adore it. I mean, I'm a science fiction author, so yeah. But I like how a lot of the people that did it do the science tracks, make it really integral and really interesting. I went to Doug Beeson's one on cybersecurity last year, and it really stuck in my mind because of how he was able to explain everything to make it seem commonplace when it was actually really in depth. Hmm. And it was just absolutely amazing. And then the year before that, there was the robot they were driving around, mm-hmm. which was also really fun to watch.
I guess, is it Courtney Willis?
Yes.
Is the scientist.
Yes.
And that's Connie's husband. Mm-hmm. And he does stuff on that track.
He does. There was one about Victorian sewing, which was really interesting that he did a couple years ago.
Victorian sewing?
And don't quote me on this because I'm pretty sure it was probably wrong. But it was something about how they industrialized the sewing machine.
Oh, wow.
And he had one with him and was like talking about it. And it was really fascinating.
Is it like with the pedal?
Uh-huh.
Where you're pumping it? Because believe it or not, So I was born in Chicago. We lived in Berwyn for several years before we moved out to Fresno. My mm-hmm. mom had both the modern, like, and I want to say modern by that as standards, I mean 70s version of like a Singer. Mm-hmm. But she also had this really old, I want to say it looked like it was cast iron. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was just this old thing that was weighed probably 10,000 pounds and it had pedal. Mm-hmm. And you pedaled it, and when you did, you hit this, and it was a huge pedal. And when you did that, it made the needle and everything go up and down and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
It was that, and then I might be wrong. I might be imagining things because it's been a year and there has been a lot going on in the past year. But I'm pretty sure there was one that predated that he was talking about as well.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. All of his panels, if you go to Mile High Con, go to a Courtney Willis panel. Like, no fans or bots, just go.
Awesome. Well, there you go. I'm such a terrible writer. I'm blanking on a word. I want to say recommendation, but I don't. Endorsement.
Yes.
There's your endorsement for Mile High Con. Go see Courtney Willis.
Yes. And then go see Connie Willis talk about writing because so much squee, or so much win.
Or Primeval.
Yeah, that too. You know, also.
Whatever she's in the mood to talk about.
Which both like work really well together.
Yeah. Well, I've told the story before. I got ridiculously nervous because Rose put me as a moderator on a panel. And as you might be aware, if you've been on panels, you get this little email and it says who's all going to be on the panel. But it's first initial, last name. Mm-hmm. So I got one that said C. Willis. And I'm going, well, that can't be Connie Willis. And I go and I looked at the website and there's two C. Willises. And I'm like, well, which one is it? And I found out it was Connie, and that didn't help. No. I was still ridiculously nervous now. You know, how am I supposed to moderate Connie Willis? Oh, yeah, come over. Anyway, so you're going to be there. Are you going? You going all 3 days?
Yes.
Because they're starting earlier this year.
They are, and there's not a whole lot that I want to miss, and I like being able to be available for like whatever Rose wants to throw me at.
Very cool. And do you know, are you going to have any books there?
I think I'm sharing a table with author J.A. Campbell.
Okay.
And we will have the books.
So you guys are going to bring your own books?
Yes.
And so anybody can walk up to you at your table and say, hey, Vivian, I would love to have an author signed copy of this book that has this gorgeous cover that's sitting here in front of you. Could I get that?
Yes. And then, I would be happy to do that.
And then it's like, what, $500?
Yes. No. No. Some of them are, let's see. Wow, inventory. I have one that's 8.
Okay.
That's the newest one that just came out. It's small.
That's
and cool. Other and ones that are normal priced.
You don't have to go through the pricing. I was just teasing you.
Oh, right. See, I'm very literal. So literal.
So you do a lot because you write. You also, if I'm not mistaken, you have something to do with WordFire?
Yes.
And then you freelance?
Yes.
So why don't you in your words, tell people who you are and what you do?
I do all of that. Seriously, I started writing professionally in 2012 and I started editing professionally in 2012. And so they kind of just streamlined into the same thing where I ended up working for WordFire Press as a editor. And then I freelance edit on the side, I freelance write on the side, and then I learn so much from everyone at WordFire that I kind of just like make it awesome with everything else.
That's cool. So what is involved with being an editor at WordFire Press?
I edit their books. They give me a book and say, would you like to edit this? And I say, yes, please, and thank you. Because, and I'm not even joking, because it probably sounds like I'm sucking up a little bit, but every single book that I've had the pleasure of editing for them is amazing.
That's cool. Yeah, they're definitely an up-and-coming imprint.
Mm-hmm. And they have good taste.
Yeah. Well, they published Kat Rambo's debut novel.
Yes. That was really, really good.
Well, I saw her at Worldcon, and she was ecstatic, and she was just so proud. And as it goes with Worldcon, I didn't get to spend anywhere near as much time talking to Kat as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like with everybody. It's like you see people and you're like, oh, we need to talk. Yes, we do. But I got to go to my panel. Me too. And then you never get to talk to them again.
Yep.
So, well, that's interesting. Do I know any of the books? Did you edit Ramon's book?
No.
Oh, okay.
I wish I had not because it needs it, but because he's awesome and I love working with him. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of looking forward to maybe him submitting more things. You can't see me, but I'm making the finger tappy thing.
Well, and he's very charismatic. Gail Carriger and I were talking about him on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Because we were talking about the energy at Worldfire at Worldcon, and they had a really good energy, and it was really nice to see. They were very excited about all their books. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'd be great if he wrote another book. He should.
Yes, definitely.
Hopefully he's working on it.
From what I've heard, he is, but I can't say for sure because I don't speak for him. He would be mad if I tried to. But I have edited several of Peter Wax's books.
Okay.
And I don't really want to get into a sales pitch here, but they're also really, really, really good. The one that I thought was the most fun to edit was Second Paradigm.
Oh, really? How come?
Because you can read it in any order.
Ah.
And so in order to edit it, you have to keep every single part of it in your head at the same time. Like one of those, like, 13th, what was the movie that had the guy that was Monk in it? Sorry, that was really random.
I know, like, what you're talking about.
13th Hour, there's a house that had all the stuff in it with the gears and everything. Anyway, metaphor is broken.
Yeah.
But you have to hold everything in your head at the same time and make sure all the pieces fit together. Otherwise, you aren't doing a very good job editing it.
Okay.
And so it was more of a mind test to be able to see if I could edit something like that. And it was really cool to be able to do so.
So you actually saw something on, you have like 12 websites. So you had something about like did you do an MFA program?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I completed my MFA from Regis University last year.
Wow, that's a pretty big time commitment.
It was, and it wasn't, because I was able to work on my novels while doing it. Mm-hmm. So it was like multitasking, but it was really fun. It was so different, because I'm such a sci-fi fantasy person, that going into an MFA with a traditional college meant that I was doing lit fic.
Okay.
And not genre fic. And so it was so much different to be able to take the tools from literary fiction and apply them towards science fiction and fantasy.
So when it comes to, I mean, your tastes and what you like and what you like to write. So first off, like what informed you? What inspired you?
Dune.
Dune, really?
Yeah, really.
Like Unabridged?
Unabridged, straight up. I read the entire thing. I read the first three books when I was 12.
Wow.
And I became immediately obsessed with the Bene Gesserits.
Interesting.
Because I wanted to be one, of course, because as you do when you're 12, you want to be a nun that can kill you with your mind. But
well, when I was 12, if I'd even known about nuns that could kill you with your mind, I would have been in trouble because I was in parochial school.
Oh, yeah. Yikes.
I didn't put those two together.
No, no.
I wasn't thinking about it that way.
Which is probably for the best, all things considered. Yeah, because
I would have been a lot more well-behaved.
Let's see. I also read everything I get my hands on. And one of the things was all of Harlan Ellison's books when I was very young.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which was formative because my parents didn't know what I was reading.
So is Harlan Ellison why you like to write on a typewriter?
Partly. Yeah.
Okay.
Actually. Also because my grandmother gave me my first typewriter and there's all of that there. But, Harlan Ellison used to do this really interesting thing where he would set up a sign in a bookstore at the window.
Yep.
And he would have people watch the author as he worked, kind of thing. He would just write short stories, just there, doing it,
yeah,
days on end.
He would also take suggestions from people and then sit there and write, and he types with two fingers.
Yes.
180 words a minute or something.
Which is fantastic. That's super fast.
Yeah.
But the first story that I remember reading was, and I'm always going to mess up the title of it, but it's Repent, Harlequin Said the TikTok Man.
Hmm.
And it won a Hugo in the 1970s, I think.
Wow.
Because my dad had this book of Hugo award-winning short stories, because they would do the anthologies every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read that and The Moon Moth by Jack Vance. And those kind of informed how I write to this day, even with like that sort of feel, the social sciences
mm-hmm.
in science fiction, more than like the, you know, hard science, like the physics and stuff like that.
Okay. So you're focusing more on society.
Yes.
All right.
Which is, and it's fascinating to do that because I just listened to this interview with Ursula Le Guin about how she writes and about how she does societies. And there's this really fascinating quote by her, and I'm going to mangle it, but it was something along the lines of, when you write, you have to write past the page.
Hmm.
You have to write the world bigger than the page you're on. And it struck me as something so incredibly like meaningful for writers.
Yeah.
Because often, like at least when I'm writing, I get stuck on that this is the next sentence I have to write and this and this and this, but I don't, if I'm not being careful, I don't think necessarily about the larger picture that everything falls into until I get to edits. But okay. If I do that while I'm writing, it makes everything so much more vibrant and big and fascinating and all of that.
That's cool. Yeah. And when you talk about writing for like about the society and that kind of stuff, you and I chatted about this before we started recording. That reminds me of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Like the original Star Trek, because that, you know, that's kind of what Gene Roddenberry was trying to accomplish, was, you know, to slip things in and make mm-hmm. people think. And even if you went back further, like Twilight Zone,
mm-hmm.
you know,
oh, very much so.
Same kind of stuff. And obviously I'm using television references because I was a kid who was, you know, the TV was my babysitter,
mm-hmm.
but that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And so bring that forward into the stuff that you're writing now. Like what are the kinds of themes that you're trying to work into your fiction to make people think about?
Well, one of the things I'm going to go from general to specific. One of the things I always think that is so important about speculative fiction is that it asks what if.
Exactly.
And so with my stories, like for the one on the Patreon, I'm asking, what if Don Quixote was written in space? Like, mm-hmm. what are the sociological consequences of having someone who is an anachronistic sort of figure, and I'm not sure I'm using that word right, within a society that no longer has time for that sort of person?
Okay.
Which translates into how we deal with mental illness.
Oh.
So you see what I'm saying?
Sly, yeah.
Yeah. You can't see me, but I'm doing jazz hands.
Well, you can't see me, but I keep nodding.
Well, and the other, I do a lot of like pastiches, and the Don Quixote in space is a pastiche basically, where I'm doing a tribute to it in another form. And I'm also doing one that I'm writing right now that I just finished writing the first 25,000 words on this weekend, was basically Carmilla in space.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to write it to make the author roll in his grave. Because Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu was a horrible person.
Oh, right. Okay.
And the reason I say, and maybe that's not fair, because he is obviously a product of his society.
Mm-hmm.
But the book was published in the 1880s or the 1870s. And it's basically lesbian vampires are evil. And that's the theme of the entire novella. And it's horrible. It's all about like, sorry?
Isn't that the crux of From Dusk Till Dawn?
Yes. It's very similar.
Yeah.
Except Victorian.
And Clooney.
Yes, yes. Exactly. That would be... Wow, that would be really interesting if... Because he would be so perfect as the general.
There you go.
One of the characters is the ward of the first victim of Carmilla. Because she goes like ravaging through the countryside of young women. And it's never really explicitly stated, but there's a lot of tee-heeing. You can tell the author is just going, tee-hee, lesbians, throughout the entire thing. And it's just like, really, guy? Really? I mean, I get you're a Victorian, but really? Really? And so the reason why I wanted to write it was to not only address the why would a vampire get into a relationship with a teenager issue, but also to kind of redeem the entire character from this like sort of voyeuristic tee-hee kind of thing into an actual well thought out character, which I know is saying a lot about my work.
Well, but it sounds like it's a worthwhile endeavor.
I hope so, and I think so. And I actually spent, I purchased, so Carmilla is now on Project Gutenberg, so it's free and you can buy it, or you can read it for free. But I bought a copy because I wanted a hard copy that I could write on. Mm-hmm. And so I went onto Amazon and found the cheapest copy I could. And it turns out they just copied the Project Gutenberg stuff, sloppily formatted it, and put it into a hardcover book that they could sell.
Of course they did.
Yeah. So that was classy. And I know encouraged that.
It's funny because when you said that you wanted a hard copy to write on, this chill went up my spine. Because that's like a thing with me. But then when you said that they copied it from Project Gutenberg and slapped it together and just printed it, I'm like, well, then screw it.
Yeah, no, it's not a good book. I actually bought a better copy that has, like, dissertations and concepts and, like, examinations of the original novel. And that one, I'm not writing it.
Okay.
The one that is just obviously stolen from Project Gutenberg and used for profit, which you can do per their guidelines, actually. I just wrote all over. There are notes, like, the way they formatted it, is it's double-spaced between paragraphs, but not within the paragraph.
Oh.
Yeah. And the margins are all wonky, and there's just, like, random breaks, and they didn't try. There was no trying. And so what I did is I just wrote pages and pages and pages of notes on how to make Carmilla into science fiction. And, like, how to explain vampires and how to make it all, you know, work out so that it would be actual, real, good-to-read science fiction, not just another Twilight in Space kind of thing.
I still remember my exposure to vampires in space was Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Nice.
I don't know if you ever saw that episode.
Mm-hmm.
With the weird guy. It was, I think, in the second season.
Yeah.
It was the space vampire.
Well, there was a Doctor Who episode, too.
I don't remember if I saw the Doctor Who episode.
It was with Tom Baker.
Hmm.
And it was, I stole the name of the ship from that episode, actually.
Would you care for a jelly baby?
Yes. No, that's not the name of the ship. The ship, he actually, like, Tom Baker wanders through and is, like, ranting about this thing that he always rants about stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he went and decided that he was going to, like, start talking about the technology. And he's like, this is just a Technicothica. And then, like, continues on. And I'm like, that's the name of the ship.
My favorite Tom Baker moment to this day is still when I forget what episode it was, but he's talking to the Earth scientist that, you know, is probably going to get killed. Mm-hmm. And the Earth and he's explaining something, and the Earth scientist says, "Well, I think I understand." And he says, "I'm sure you don't, but it's kind of you to try." and it was just this great moment, and he gets the big grin.
Uh huh.
And it's just, it's still my favorite moment.
It's the best thing ever. Did you ever see him in the, what was that, the C.S. Lewis adaptations?
Mm-mm.
He was the Marshwiggle.
Oh, wow.
And he was excellent at it.
I have seen the strange 80s Australian commercials that he did as Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are they on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
I will have to look these up because that is necessary.
It was very strange. I mean, I guess you got to make money.
Yes.
So. Oh, boy. So we also wanted to talk about, you have the Seven Stories of Cibola.
Yes.
And I pronounced it right.
You did.
That's because I phonetically typed or wrote it out here in my notebook. Shh, don't tell anybody. So let's talk about that. What's that?
It's a series of seven weird westerns. Mm-hmm. And it's a very short book based out of New Mexico in the 1880s. It's actually based out of Grants, New Mexico, but the city I've named in and modified for the novel or for the novellas and the short stories is called Cibola. And I think I'm being very clever because the reason the Spaniards in part came to the West was to look for the seven cities of Cibola, which is seven cities of gold. And a lot of what I'm writing about is the impact of expansionism and manifest destiny on the West.
Okay.
And so people that come to the West, why they came and what they're doing. And one of the stories is about Billy the Kid. There's another one about, the first one is actually about vampires and based off of a legend that I grew up with in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
It's the legend of La Llorona, which is basically about the woman whose children get drowned because they are the Duke's children and she's not married to him. And then she gets burned as a witch because otherwise she'd tell about the Duke sleeping around.
Rotten Duke.
Yeah, that was classy of him. And it's a legend. I don't know if it actually happened, but growing up, I lived close enough to the Rio Grande where I would wake up at night and look out my window and see the river and go, I wonder if she's out there, and then shiver and hide under my blankets. Because she's the wailing woman who wanders by the river and then steals children because her onward round. As okay. you do.
Yep.
And so I've taken a lot of the legends and a lot of the stuff that I grew up with in New Mexico and formulated it into these stories to kind of share my experiences, as well as to, I think, write really good weird westerns.
Well, and I talked with, I'm trying to remember who I talked with. I talked to so many people. I was talking with someone who was from LA, and we were talking about how LA lends itself to noir, especially Hollywood. Right?
Yes.
Because it's just a great backdrop for that, you know? And when we talk about Colorado, it's like I wrote an urban fantasy set in Denver, and I wanted to talk about a really bad neighborhood, and I mentioned the Colfax. And everybody who's from Denver read it and went, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
New Mexico is, number one, is gorgeous. And yes. If people haven't been there, they need to go.
Like right now, just pack up and go.
God, yes. And it's also full of this kind of stuff, legends, and I think it lends itself really well to storytelling. So I'm fascinated by what you're talking about. Are all seven stories based on a different kind of legend or myth from New Mexico?
Not necessarily. They're based on my memories of New Mexico.
Oh, interesting.
There's a story about a priest, and it's about the penitentes in northern New Mexico, who are the people who whip themselves and carry crosses around.
Mm.
And then there's, let me see if I can remember, there's one about the railroads that come in. And that's one of the main conflicts is the railroads that keep coming east. And in my universe, there's this thing called the Company, which has taken over much of the eastern United States. And so the West is really the last bastion of freedom.
Okay.
And in the universe as well, I'm basing, are you familiar with the legend of the island of California?
No.
Okay. So, and I think it's kind of obscure because not a lot of people from California have heard of it. So Californians listen. But the reason California is named California from this legend is because the Spaniards read a novel where this guy had set location in the United, or in the, what was to be the United States, far to the west, where this Muslim woman ruled, and she was the Khalifa. And her nation was called California.
Oh.
And so in my universe, there is actually a Khalifa who owns and rules California.
See, I grew up in Fresno and I didn't know that.
See, it's the weirdest thing. I Googled and I found it. So yay for Google. And someone, in fairness, someone may have made that up.
Sure.
But I'm running with it. I don't care.
Do you have anything like any stories about hot air balloons?
Not yet. But that is a New Mexico thing. Oh my goodness, New Mexico thing.
It's funny because years ago I was working at a mortgage company and they bought this, or they franchised, or however they did it, I forget how they did it, but a branch in New Mexico in Albuquerque. And so all the people came in, and at the time I used to live off of Colorado Boulevard and I-25, and I used to go to Little Anita's.
Yeah.
And I loved Little Anita's. I still do. I just don't get to eat there much. And I always thought it was this little hole-in-the-wall place. And so these people come up from Albuquerque, and they're asking about good Mexican food. And I said, well, you know, coming from California, it's hard for me to find good Mexican food, but I really like this place called Little Anita's. You would think that I had drop-kicked a baby.
Yeah.
They went on a rant about what a dive dump chain Little Anita's was. It broke my heart a little bit. I was like, aw.
In fairness, I do like Little Anita's.
Oh, I love Little Anita's.
And I like it in New Mexico, too.
Oh, okay. Well, I see, I've never had it in New Mexico. I've only had it here in Colorado. But I know there's two of them here that I've been to. The one off of I-25 and, Yosemite?
I think so, yeah.
Area over there by Park Meadows. I'm getting really, like, the listeners are going, I don't know what you're talking about. And then the one off of Colorado Boulevard. And they used to have one on Colfax.
Yeah.
And I think that closed.
Yeah.
That was, because, like, the worst. Colfax. Well, yeah. And it was the worst location possible.
Yeah.
Colfax.
Colfax. Yeah.
So that's awesome. And is that when is that coming out?
That is out now in paperback.
Okay.
It's the one that's eight. So if you go to Mile High Con, just say you heard about it and I will sign it. Actually, I'll sign it for you anyway. But that, and I'm still working on getting the ebooks out. I want them to look their very, very best. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not using Scrivener for it. I'm actually using Calibre, but it's in the queue of many things to get done.
Understood.
Yeah. So if you want the ebook, please wait. It's worth the wait.
There you go. And it'll only be $12. So.
Yes. As we do.
So believe it or not, we're out of time. This is, but this has been a huge amount of fun.
Well, I'm glad.
Why don't you tell people, number one, your website.
My website is VivianCaethe.com. It's C-A-E-T-H-E.
And are you on social media anywhere that you want people to come and find you?
I am on the Twitters as @VivianCaethe. I am on Facebook as VivianCaethe. And I am on Instagram as Shibby Biscuits. It's a long story.
It usually is. It usually is. And you're coming to Mile High Con at the end of October. And now, actually, after talking to you for a little bit about the seven stories, I understand why you went to Myth and Legends Con.
Yes.
Which was a couple weeks or months back.
It was the beginning, August 14th-ish.
Yeah. I was going to say it's just before WorldCon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, because that's where... So now I understand that because you're all over the Myths and Legends, which is awesome.
Yes.
Any other cons or appearances you're planning on for the rest of the year?
I will be at FenCon in Dallas in a couple weeks, actually.
Oh, is that after Mile High Con?
It's before Mile High Con. It's this month.
Okay, I don't know if our listeners will hear this in time.
Well, if they do hear it later,
yes,
they'll know that I was there.
They will, yeah. Well, that and the spray paint on the wall.
Yes, yes.
So that'll be kind of cool.
It's a new hotel; they won't know.
And then, do you ever travel with the WordFire crew?
I do sometimes. Okay. Yes, so, I'm hoping, crossing my fingers and doing a little dance, hoping to make it to WorldCon next year.
Oh, that'd be awesome! I'll be
yes.
there. Yeah, Kansas City.
Oh yes, Kansas City. Woo-hoo.
That it's a great city. It's a great area. I wish that it was possible to get barbecue there.
I don't, but I'm vegetarian, and you cannot barbecue tofu. It does not work.
You know what you can barbecue that's awesome?
Huh?
Pineapple.
Oh my goodness! Yes, yes.
Melt in your mouth, pineapple.
Yes.
That is. I have considered paying the outrageous, ridiculous prices to go to Rodizio Grill just to get their pineapple.
Yes.
Because it's so good.
It's so worth it.
And zucchini. I like grilled zucchini too.
That's also very good.
Mm-hmm. So there is some stuff.
But it's not protein, man.
It's not protein. Yeah, it's difficult to grill tofu.
Yeah, it's awkward.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good. But anyway, thanks for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to tell our listeners before I let you go?
Just thank you for listening, and thank you for letting me be here, Patrick.
No problem. Alrighty, we will see Vivian at Mile High Con, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends. And have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.